afternoon, everyone. And first of all, my thanks. Thank you, David. Thank you, Al, for the invitation to speak today. Also thanks to the LSE for the 40 years of MARG, which has been a wonderful thing, both here and in Aston. I'm very pleased to be here at the LSE on this podium, which I haven't been at before, because it allows me briefly to just tell a story that a friend of mine who was a student here in the 70s said, and I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but he said that in the old lecture theatre, some lecturer started up and said, "Is that all right for sound? Can you hear me at the back?" And some of you may know the answer to this. The answer came back, "Yes, I can, but I'm prepared to swap with someone who can't." Anyway, I'll speak loudly so that you can't go to sleep. Just briefly about myself, I came into academic life after some time with Deloitte and with KPMG as an auditor, and also as a SEMA member, I was responsible for general business guidance and advice to SMEs. And I think this may have been one of the reasons that Michael kindly invited me to talk. He also had seen the publication that has come out recently from SEMA, and in that regard, I want to say that what I'm talking about today is not an academic paper. It is not intended to be a formal academic paper with hypotheses being tested, but is principally descriptive. And so that, please take that in that spirit. I was not aware, none of us were, I don't think any of the speakers, the extent to which our talks would overlap. So some of this will seem perhaps a little bit familiar, but from perhaps a slightly different perspective, and may enable me to save time and to make up some of the time, though probably not all of the deficit. So I came into academic life not quite 40 years ago, after some time in the profession. And over the 40 years of MARG, what I have observed, and some of this again will be perhaps repeating, but just three items I want to pull out, which I have interested me. First of all, the increased financial results-based cybernetics, with the tiresome target, measure, reward, increase the target, measure, reward cycle, which is so prevalent in all fields of work, and I would take the view excessively so. So there's that that happened. The control systems, which some of us had some part in writing about and researching, seem to suffer from our own success, perhaps. Secondly, what I've observed is the increased familiarity of operational managers with accounting. And I find it very worrying and appalling. There's the dumbing down of accounting concepts. David was very appropriately referring to variable costing, but now every minor manager in every organization has their budgets, and they all talk about costs, and they don't know the difference between incremental costs and non-incremental costs. And all sorts of incorrect decisions get made on the basis of some cram course. So I think that's very worrying. And this dumbing down can also be seen in this ridiculous business of red, amber, green sort of signals that are coming through and decisions being made. That, I think, is all very worrying. That's the second thing. So this takeover of cybernetics, and secondly, this issue of everybody's got their PC link to some database that they don't understand. Mind you, when David was talking about computer printouts, I remember being an auditor, and you'd get the whole 12 months of computer printouts from the chief accountant or whatever, and you would discover that they'd been bound inwards as opposed to outwards. Do you remember those green and white lines? And you realized that no one had read them. Anyway, the third major aspect that I want to talk about is the decrease in the decision relevance of historical cost accounting. And we've been through this, most of us in the room, we've seen it. And you know, we know about Tobin's Q and all that. And we were there in 2001, 2002 when the dot-com companies splurged and then failed. But the fact is that historical cost accounting has very little relevance now. It has some relevance, like police in the streets. The existence of the police prevents crime, but it doesn't really have a lot of decision relevance. And this has made other things more interesting and more important. It's led me into researching intellectual capital and human capital in particular, and publishing about it, and also non-financial performance measurement. Perhaps I was just following the trend, but also profit sharing, PRP companies, profit-related pay, and all that sort of stuff, and research into asking people what effect it had upon their behavior or not, and then into behavioral accounting. My recent work, and that's probably my final work, has tied together my interest in intellectual value of businesses with accounting's interface with human resources, human resource management. And that is innovation companies, because innovation companies are companies where a lot of their value is intellectual capital, and I'm interested in performance measurement and human resource behavior, and of course that is fundamentally affected, for better and for worse, by management control systems. Now, this is a large project, or has been for me quite a large project, and the principal work has been done by a PhD student of mine, Ellen Haustein, and she takes the credit for the stuff that's good. And quite rightly, well, she didn't say that herself, but I would give it to her. But at any rate, it's been a great pleasure working with her, and she's not here today. So, what else do I want to say? I'm pressing the wrong thing, that one. Okay, the areas of focus of what I want to talk about are, here we go. First of all, innovation. Something about innovation. I looked up on the web in preparation for this talk. I looked up again innovation. If you look on the web, there are about 150 different definitions of innovation and innovative, and innovation particularly. The one that I particularly like, if I had to choose one, is something which just says an innovation is something new, useful, and surprising. I think surprising is the big issue because, you know, things get better to some extent incrementally, but it's the surprising, and the surprising is what I would maintain in our current environment we need to promote the surprising good things. Innovation can be new or enhanced products, services, or markets, but it can also be increased efficiency, which is about often bringing down costs. And as regards the priority, I do feel very strongly about this, about the importance of innovation. It's an overused word, but I think it's important for societies. In our society, particularly at this time, I think we need to focus on the idea that if we don't want to live in a low-wage economy, we need to try to aspire for good living and working conditions and standards. We need to try to promote sustainable businesses that pay their way, not by paying low wages or exploiting the environment or whatever, but by new products and new applications, while staying competitive by driving down costs with good ideas. So that's from the point of view of societies. From the point of business managers, it's been shown that higher value creation occurs in innovative companies than in less innovative companies in the same industry. There is evidence for that. Also, for business managers, by being innovative, you avoid the risks of becoming irrelevant. You avoid the risk of being a Kodak, or of being an old-fashioned camera business, or of being a traditional hotel, middle-range hotel, or being a traditional taxi company or whatever. In the current environment, the value to customers is derived largely from the empowerment of employees and the harnessing of human capital. And because of that, I think this draws in the importance of appropriate management control systems. The importance cannot be overstated, I don't think. By the way, I should make an apology. The slides that you've got won't be the same as the slides that, because they've changed. So where do we go from here? Innovation companies. Just a little bit about, this is some of the descriptive stuff which I'm adding to those excellent theories that were talked about this morning. So innovation companies, what do we think of? New products, we think about Dyson, we think about 3D printing, smartphones and so forth. Also new services, Uber and ride sharing and so forth. Also new marketing. Perhaps like a lot of men, I've been very pleased with what I can do now that I can just have a shaving solution rather than having to buy anything, because I just pay money and every 3 months they anticipate how many razor blades I need. And so things like that seems a good innovation. And of course, the other one is the new cost-saving processes, and an example is paperless offices, one example. Now, interestingly, since we started this project, there's been a new publication by a government-supported innovation survey with a very large sample, much larger than the one that we've got. And some of the findings that I read the other day are that small SMEs are less innovative than larger companies on the measure that they used. I think that's interesting, because I think perhaps in this audience, we'll have some people who are in somewhat smaller organizations. I was also delighted by this publication, which said that the southwest of England, which I'm a great champion of, is the most innovative part in the United Kingdom by quite a long shot. And don't mean to be rude, but Ulster is about 15 points lower down, percentage points. So they have got these ideas of areas. And I'm also pleased, because I think that Falmouth and university activity in the southwest has had something to do with that. There are some industries that they particularly highlight as having become more innovative, or especially more innovative. The one that I'm interested in was the one which has become thankfully less innovative, which is the financial intermediation industry. And I think we'd be pleased that those innovations seem to be less frequent than they were in the previous 20 years. Finally, they indicated that there has been a massive increase in this three-year period that they were talking about over the previous three-year period in cooperation between business entities, which David Otley was talking about. They measure that there has been an increase from 67% of the companies that they surveyed to 80% who cooperate with their suppliers, from 58% that were previously cooperating with their customers to 70%, and with the competitors, an increase of 28% to 50%. So, and it is one of the hallmarks of an innovative company and innovation companies that there is a high degree of networking and cooperation. So, innovation companies. Management control systems, we had a lot of good stuff here, and I'm aware that perhaps in the audience there are people who I'm very pleased to read their wisdom. But this, I believe, is from Merchant and van der Stede. So management control systems, devices or systems used by managers to ensure that the behaviors and decisions of their employees are consistent with the organization's objectives. All businesses achieve what they do or what they don't by harnessing the people that are in their teams. So these are the areas of focus that I will get onto as soon as possible. Categories of management control systems. Categories are not the same as individual control techniques, and we will look at these ideas, and our model, based upon other people's models, has four categories of management control systems, and we'll be looking at the effects of specific controls and types of controls on innovation performance. And I'd like to acknowledge with gratitude Seema for this project. There are other outputs coming out of this, and that's all I need to say, I think, at that point. Right, so prior studies about management control systems and innovation. I want to stress just the first paragraph up there. Really, the conventional wisdom has been for a long time that inappropriate management control systems hinder flexibility and creativity. And early studies basically said you shouldn't try to control if you want creativity and innovation. More recently, as we heard a little bit also today already, companies with high knowledge intensity and enhanced needs for organizational learning find management controls useful. Bisbee and Malagueno usefully explain that sustained innovation is a consequence of processes that have to be managed, both in terms of creativity and also conversion. Other people talk about the need for control to avoid uncertainty, and in the levers of control, Simon suggests that MCS are required to manage the tension between creativity and predictable goal achievement. Right. And our search aim had three research questions. The bottom line, which management control systems lead to higher overall performance? So our study was empirical. We have got some parts that are very, hopefully, academically rigorous. Today and in the management report, the executive report, it is more descriptive. I think that's more meaningful to most people. So we are looking at what control systems lead to higher performance, and we collect data to address that. Secondly, what specific control techniques? Now, control techniques should be distinguished from control systems. Control techniques are the individual tools applied. And which of those are they used? So on a survey, we find out which ones are used a lot. And we also ask people simultaneously in companies, what effect do they have on their innovation performance? Not their overall performance. The overall performance is a balanced scorecard type measure. But this is innovation performance. And the third thing is what factors, these are contingency type factors, which factors influence the types of management control systems, that's the systems, and also the specific controls that are applied. So this is something that you've seen, something very similar to this before. Well, you'll see the line I'd like to emphasize. Right, we've got direct and indirect controls. This is a sort of an adaptation of various other things, but a person, Hutchenreuter, 2009, introduced this direct-indirect dichotomy. And you will see under direct, you've got results control and action control, whereas indirect are personnel control and cultural control. It's the notion of control that I think perhaps is the most interesting thing we should take out of here. Results control is based upon controlling outputs, measuring and controlling outputs. Action control is controlling people's behavior, what they actually can and should do. Personnel control is a self-control type concept. And cultural control, which wasn't in the schema we had earlier, is group control, which is based upon establishing a culture and using role models and that sort of thing. So that's that. Our research approach, I think I can probably save time by not spending much time on that, except down the bottom, perhaps. Here, perhaps I do need to see. We derived three models for regression analysis. Model one addressed objective A, and two and three are C. B is just a descriptive communication of our findings from the survey. So model one here, we were looking at the effects of different control systems, our four different categories, upon overall company performance. So if you were wanting to be a well-performing company, then you might want to know which control systems seem to be appropriate. Model two is looking at the contingency factors or the effect of those on, so what type of company characteristics are associated with each of those. So here the control systems are the dependent variables, the outcomes. And then this one is just similar, except it's not looking at control systems, it's looking at individual management control techniques. Sample. What a nightmare this project was. Trying to get data. Something which I thought perhaps David might have mentioned there is the difficulty of doing management accounting or management control research increasingly, because it's very difficult to get inside organizations or to get people to respond. And we did a whole lot of sort of contemporary stuff, which had very poor effect. Eventually, I went back to getting onto the phone, trying to blag past the telephonist to sort of say, do you have someone who's interested in your innovation or your corporate learning? And then I'd get through and I'd try and pretend I knew them or met them somewhere. And could I send you a questionnaire through the post? And eventually, but it was ridiculously hard work. That limited the benefit of art because we battled to get a really good sample size. Interestingly, on the continent of Europe, managers seem to be much more compliant and obedient if you send them a request there. But I don't know why that is. So this was completed March 17. We had to select companies that had a high level of innovation. We had our own way of selection criteria. We excluded companies less than 20 employees. We had 111 completed surveys. We had to cut that down to 78, and that's something about our sample. Objective A, what types of management control systems seem appropriate for innovation companies based upon the effect on a balanced scorecard type corporate performance indicator or measure? So, this just says what we did. And this is very brief. I've had to cut this down, pare it down pretty hard. But here you will see what we found was that of the innovation companies, those that apply high levels of results control tend to very significantly have better overall performance. Those that have a high level of action control have a significantly worse performance as business operations. And these other two categories failed to give us a significant result. So our interpretation of this, obviously the unsuitability of action control. Action controls are based upon centralized authority, direct monitoring, restricted autonomy, and formal planning, and they are unlikely to foster creativity. This is old economy, not new economy stuff, isn't it? Only repetitive tasks should be managed by impersonal means. So there's all that stuff about action controls, and down the bottom, results control had significant positive effects on performance. That was against our expectation. Our expectation from the literature, contemporary literature, was that results control was uncertain, it was ambiguous, but it was perhaps likely to diminish performance. Objective B, we wanted to identify management controls applied. So this is our descriptive question. We're not going to test, we're not using statistics here, except to report the summary what we found in the survey. So, respondents were asked to indicate the extent of use and the effect on innovation performance, not overall performance, for the 22 control techniques which we had identified by looking at prior publications, prior research projects. I do just want to say, I don't want to blow our trumpet too much, but it's so frequently written in journals, more empirical work needs to be done, but it just doesn't seem to be being done much, and perhaps I found out why with this work, because it seems to be harder than ever. But this project will have its weaknesses, it has, but it is an attempt to see what is actually going on. Now, here I have listed the different control techniques. I've ranked them according to the extent of use, the mean values across the sample. So the most frequently reported control technique was this: routine analysis of financial performance against target, variances from budget, and differences between actual and standard products. So this is conventional budgeting and variance and reporting. And it's very highly used. It's a results control there. Then if we look at the top of these ones, that's the analysis. This is the budget approval process. This is the job-specific recruitment. Here's a personnel control. Job-specific recruitment and selection process for new hires. It's widely applied. I'll just go to C, I think. Top management regularly or frequently communicate performance. Again, frequently used. Now, because of time, I'm going to push on. We had 22 of these, and let's not spend time going through them all. But down at the bottom, we've got ones here which are not frequently used, but in the literature are espoused or have been found. I'm going to go back because what interested us, and what I might just refer to briefly, is where these rankings are different. So here we've got routine analysis, a mean of 4, and here on a, that's out of 5, here on a scale of -2 to +2 about the effect upon innovation performance, you will see that it's 0.42. It's not very high. Here, this, if you want innovation, and we've shown that innovative companies, or it is the case that innovative companies have better overall performance, well, if you want it, according to the survey, people who completed the survey, this is exceptionally high. Likewise, down here, employee training and development programs. And anyway, I'll summarize this difference in rankings by going to here. 4 of the top 5 control instruments are personnel control techniques. Not one of them, of the top 5, is an action control or results control type technique. Secondly, 5 instruments rank highly in contributing to innovation performance, but are used surprisingly little. So if you have any influence upon some business where you are trying to do well, and you want to do well by doing innovation well, then I suspect that these things might be worth thinking about. Because particularly in small companies, thanks to David for this idea, but particularly in small businesses, resources are tight. And so a lot of the management, accounting, and control information tends to be what's required for tax purposes or for other regulatory purposes or for the director's responsibilities. But these things need not be massively expensive, even in small businesses. People being given job specifications which permit and encourage innovation and some freedom to fail. Employee training and development programs. Organizational arrangements to encourage multidisciplinary interaction. Mentoring. mentoring, in universities it works very well when it works well, and I'm sure the case would apply equally well in businesses. Social events and outings. What we also found was that routine analysis of financial performance against, that's that top one I talked about, and budget approval, are both very frequently used, but ranked only 12th and 18th out of 22 in terms of their effect upon innovative development. Four instruments rate highly for both. So these are frequently used and very effective. Objective C, there were only three, remember, we're getting there. Objective C. What factors influence the type of management controls and the specific techniques? So we went through the sort of thing you would expect. I haven't given the data for the management control systems, but I have given it this for the individual techniques, but this, you'll see, it would take a bit of thinking about. But down the y-axis, well, on the left-hand side, we've got these management control techniques, budget approval process, routines to capture. We've only reported where there is a significant relationship between those things and what we might think of as the contingency factors across the top. So there's not many negative things here, but pay for performance in high technology companies seems to, the higher the technology quotient for a company, the less they use pay for performance. There's another negative down here also in technological companies. But there's a lot of stuff here. Perhaps if we concentrated on some of the highly significant things, we will see that innovation-related job specifications is highly correlated with the extent to which the companies cooperate. So
let's look at the observations here. One of the interesting things we were able to tease out by looking at controls techniques as opposed to control systems was that cost leaders, there's a lot of cost leadership companies that call themselves innovation companies and that would qualify under the criteria that we applied as innovation companies because they've been very innovative in changing their processes to make them, and they need to be, to make them more cost effective, more competitive. So I think this is a sort of a little throwaway for policy makers for national and regional issues, is that innovation companies include those that innovate to be differentiators, and they won't want to use direct controls, but also it includes those that are aiming to be cost leader, concentrate on cost leadership, and they do need that. They do need action controls in particular, or they use them and they're found to be useful. This is a quote, and I'm afraid I can't remember where it comes from. People are central to innovation performance. Relatively high levels of innovation can be achieved where people are empowered to make changes, but where they feel controlled by another party, they will be unlikely to look for new and creative solutions. And this ties in quite well with Roland's... all right, yes, thank you. Okay. Indirect controls are effective. Management control systems are of value. We feel we've addressed this question, should there be management control systems in companies aspiring to be innovative? Well, we, like other people, would say yes, there is a role for management control systems. The ability of a company to innovate is associated with both types of indirect control. Results controls, although not promoters of innovation, are associated with better overall performance. So this results control is pointing in different ways, whether one's looking at results control systems or individual results controls. And it goes quite appropriately with the usual caveats about how they are applied and designed. My final slide, I think, Budgeting is widely used by innovation companies with cost leadership. The widespread default practice of reinforcing results controls by pay for performance and profit sharing are not much used, nor seem to be as effective in promoting innovation performance as instruments of other categories. Now, I can't find the quote, but people say that actually, you know, money is quite good, getting a reward, it makes you feel good about it, may get you to concentrate for 3 or 4 weeks, and then you forget about it. The fact is that most people in new economy companies enjoy their work, and they give their best work when they are enjoying themselves, and they are best when they are the right people put into the slot that's what's required to be done, and they are given their head. Here's this last thing, and thanks to David, this is a little tag that you gave me. I've written it here. Smaller companies' limited resources may concentrate controlling and management accounting efforts on what is needed for company funding and regulatory requirements. However, some fairly cheap indirect management controls may warrant more attention. So I think that's... Oh, the caveats of our methodology are there. Thank you.